What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap. It's the Fightful Select Report podcast. We got your news. We got your Q&A. So why wait around? Let's jump right into it. AEW Wrestle Dream happened this weekend. Lots of stuff going on there. Lots of news that we had there. One of those was that MJF was returning to AEW sooner than later. And we had the details right before he popped up on our Discord. So make sure you guys check that out, as well as Adam Cole. Adam Cole is cleared. MJF at least told people that he is headed back to continue filming Happy Gilmore 2, but he was also cast in another movie starring Justin Long and Ron Perlman. But both of those guys back in the fold, we had reported that both of them were backstage at AEW Wrestle Dream. But some other notes from the show. Daniel Garcia expected to factor into the TNT title picture. At one point, Garcia's return was considered for Wrestle Dream, which would have been a triple return. Takeshita had been planned to win the title, the international title, rather, for a number of weeks. We had reported that he was in store for a pretty good push. Will Ospreay is not scheduled for this week's Dynamite as he sells his injuries. There are definitely some people that push for Private Party to win this week, although the Young Bucks. Young Bucks said, that doesn't work for us, brother. Funny enough, I know they're playing it up. I heard they really do not care who they lose to. Like, it is not an issue for them, but other people wanted them to kind of hold on to that. Tony Khan, rare instance where he was not at a Jaguars game. The game was in London, so it would have been a 9-hour flight at least from Seattle, loading, unloading in addition to that time. And then the game kicked off 9.5 hours after Wrestle Dream ended. So it would have been very difficult to make that and actually see a substantial amount of it. And the game didn't go that way well anyway. AEW had Madison Rayne produce the four-way women's match on Dynamite. A lot of people were dropping the Britt Baker, oh, that's not going to work for me, sister, like type of line. Like, she just didn't show up because she didn't want to lose. I've never heard of it being an issue with Britt Baker losing matches. And in fact, I had been told at points throughout her career, she lost to kind of prove a point, to prove that she could take those pins. She had strep throat and could not travel out of Orlando. And I mean, listen, you can say what you want about Britt Baker, but getting that sick and keeping yourself in a hurricane in order to not lose to Willow Nightingale, that's not realistic. Swerve was always planned to be featured on AEW Wrestle Dream in some capacity, but the creative direction was adjusted throughout the week. And one of those was that of Bobby Lashley. A lot of people were like, well, where's Lashley? I'm told he was considered for this show. We had a report on it that dropped on Sunday, but he was discussed for this and maybe even at one point scheduled. And I believe the word going around was that if this were the situation, it wouldn't be Lashley just facing off with Swerve. Swerve and he would probably get into a physical altercation. And when you already beat down and attempted murder one hometown guy, maybe not doing it to a second is probably the best course of action there. Bobby Lashley is signed to AEW, and he is set to show up, I believe, this month. I'm not going to sit here and say imminently or anything like that, but he has been signed since late September and will be coming into the company and working his program with Swerve. A person who left the company last week is Jimmy Jacobs. Now, I think a lot of people are going off the deep end in both directions on this. Here are the facts surrounding the situation. Jimmy Jacobs was facing a lot of burnout and had been at more shows than anybody besides Tony Khan in the last year and a half since he started to work there. He had been there since June 2023. He had spent years in TNA and Impact, in WWE prior, and he was facing a lot of burnout and effectively resigned. He was not fired. He was not let go, and we're told that AEW was like, okay, that's understandable, and we are going to use this opportunity to pivot in a different direction because, admittedly, during the period of which Jimmy Jacobs was Tony Khan's right-hand man, they did feel like they lost their way a little bit creatively. That doesn't mean that he wasn't liked. People really liked Jimmy Jacobs in AEW. But they were going to take that opportunity to listen to a lot of the criticism that was levied their way and freshen up that writer's room. There were a lot of incorrect aggregations of Ibu, of WrestlePurist's space, where people claim that he didn't know Okada. That is not true. Ibu had mentioned that he wasn't familiar with the AEW product before coming into AEW. That is true. He did not watch the product, but he was open to recommendations and ideas from people. And again, I can't convey this enough. Well-liked. He's well-liked by most people in the wrestling industry. I've been told that it's not like a bridge had been burned or anything like that. But he felt like it was time for him to move on. AEW felt like, well, with him moving on, it's probably a great opportunity for us to move in a more fan service friendly direction. Now, I know a lot of people took issue with what we will talk about next, the Bryan Danielson story. But yeah, Jacobs did work hand in hand with Chris Jericho on the learning tree and stuff like that. Although I'll say this, the execution was not what he had in mind, like the hi guys and stuff like that. I had been told that that was not the direction in which he was anticipating that going. But Jimmy Jacobs, effectively a free agent, I think he'll probably take some time. That's what people were expecting him to do. Bryan Danielson has retired from in-ring competition on a full-time basis. So Fightful Select had a big report immediately after the show. Oh, man. I mean, you can go check out my opinions on the post show. I feel like Danielson should have tapped out, and I expanded on that there. But he lost to Jon Moxley, and his full-time career was effectively over. It was indicated to us that Danielson specifically wanted to lose to Moxley. It was his call. That was important for him. It was important for Tony Khan to honor what he wanted. And AEW doctors legitimately did not allow Bryan Danielson to be involved in Blood and Guts. However, it was something the company was hoping could happen throughout the year. Danielson, however, was cleared to compete in regular matches along his road to full-time retirement. And many people wondered if his interviews were in character regarding his health status. Those were true. There was serious concern about his physicality and the level of which he'd be able to compete moving forward. So it was also important to Tony Khan, I'm told, for him to be world champion at some point. But there were some even regrets or concerns about Danielson working the few matches he worked in between winning the title and losing the title, but they wanted him to have a little bit of a run there. Danielson has legitimately been without a talent contract for a number of months, but we're told that he does not have any additional contracts. He is effectively a free agent. He does not have additional obligations. He is expected to get neck surgery and be sidelined for quite some time. Now, he told me that he would like to come back and contribute in AEW. He has told other people that the only situation in which would lead him back to WWE is not a Hall of Fame, in which he doesn't care about, but a situation where WWE would need him for the wrestling ecosystem to sort of balance itself out. But there is no 100% commitment that Daniel or Bryan Danielson will continue to wrestle. But a lot of these things were very important to him and things that he communicated along the way. Speaking of something that was important to someone along the way, he beat Swerve at All In, and I'm told that Swerve specifically wanted to tap out. They mentioned maybe doing a pass out thing there, and he's like, no, I think I should tap out. And it was known virtually since the start of Swerve's reign that Danielson was going to be the one that ended it. So I got to interview Danielson for the first time about a month or two ago, and it was very important to me. It was one of the interviews I've wanted to do for a very long time, and just honored to be able to have done that, and wish him well in his full-time retirement. Another interview I was very excited to do, Mark Briscoe. We talked about him fighting his brother, about how he wants to defend the ROH title on TV more, which we have seen him do. Worth checking that one out. And we also dropped the interview with Orange Cassidy with Shirley talking about British food and the like. But a backstage story that emerged from AEW, MVP and Chris Jericho. A lot of people wondered, well, what's going to happen there? MVP had, according to people close to him, gotten into a fight with Jericho on the cruise and maybe clocked Jericho, as well as had a situation where they almost got into it at an AEW talent hotel long before MVP had left WWE, where there were some words exchanged. But I'm told that the night that MVP joined AEW, he found wherever Chris Jericho's locker room was or where he was changing, approached him, and they had a closed-door conversation. Now, both of these people, from what I understand, have told people about this, but haven't maybe divulged what was said. But I'm told that they hashed it out. Everything was fine. And Jericho even stood in on an MVP promo recently. But that both men gained a lot of respect for how they handled that situation, because it was something that a lot of people were monitoring and saying, oh, what's going to happen here? And as it turns out, everything ended up just fine. We have lots of WWE news as well. The Netflix deal. So it had been rumored a while back by WrestleVotes that the first Netflix show on Raw would take place in LA. We were able to confirm it is scheduled for LA. It is currently slated for the Intuit Dome, an incredible new venue that's going to host Clippers games. But that's a big one. And we're told that they're going to try to make this one of the most buzzworthy WWE Raws, period. And I had been asking about this for quite some time. And one of the people said the show is likely to become one of the biggest episodes in Raw history from the standpoint of buzz. I know they're expecting Cena there. They're hopeful they can get The Rock. Hopeful before you guys go and aggregate that. But WWE views the move to Netflix as their next leap in popularity. Like, that is something that they are really banking on helping them increase their popularity even from what it is. And also, there is a bit of a gap between Survivor Series and Royal Rumble, because right now there is no PLE announced for December. There is no PLE announced for January. There is Saturday night's main event, which is scheduled for Peacock and is sort of there, but no major PLE, and they're looking at Saturday night's main event and this Netflix show or this Netflix debut as a way to help bridge that gap, from what I understand. So that will be a good one to monitor as well. I'm thinking major things are going to happen there. Had so many people asking me, what have you heard about The Rock? What have you heard about The Rock? What about Rock and WrestleMania? So it was reported this past week that The Rock had informed WWE that he wouldn't be working WrestleMania and his schedule wouldn't allow it. He indicated on Instagram that that was bullshit, but I just hadn't heard anything like that. And when I hadn't heard anything like that, I'm not sure outside of that what it is that I'm supposed to kind of put out there or report. I just haven't heard anything like that. And if that was the case, a lot of the top talent was not made aware of such, which would, come as a shock to a lot of that top talent. So as of right now, I have not heard anything about anybody who is not working WrestleMania. I think if anything, people these days are going to be clearing their schedules for that. That's what I expect to see, because WrestleMania is such a major cultural situation right now. Some CM Punk news after Hell in a Cell. What an incredible match that was. It was really great. Just as a bit of a status update 11 months in, I continue to hear good things about CM Punk backstage. I think that he's really taking this as an opportunity to not justify or give any sort of opportunity for his haters to zero in on the things that people have criticized him about, whether he believes they're wrongfully or not wrongfully. Alexandra Williams was the writer for his promo. She has been doing a lot of the CM Punk, Drew McIntyre stuff. As of last week, he was not expected to be at Saudi Arabia. That's why he said that he was going to go away for a little while. He's expected at like most other shows. Like, I haven't heard that he is working like a severely, severely limited schedule. So I think it's abundantly clear that he's not working the Saudi show because something from a moral standpoint and probably the things that he said prior. But otherwise, he's worked Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Bash in Berlin, Bad Blood, and is scheduled for Survivor Series. So when people are out there saying, oh, this person is scheduled for, or Punk is scheduled for the Raw debut on Netflix or Royal Rumble, yeah, he's there for those shows. Like, that's not going to be anything that necessarily needs to be thrown out there beyond that. We got to look at some of the producers for NXT. Matt Bloom and Shawn Michaels produced the Trick Williams promo. Fit Finley produced Oba Femi and Tony D'Angelo. Steve Corino produced the Fraxium versus A-Town Down Under match. We had Terry Taylor producing the Randy Orton, Javon Evans match, which I believe there was either an incorrect or a wire crossing. We had not been told that Javon Evans and Randy Orton had rehearsed that spot intensively or anything like that. That has been reflected on the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. But also, Matt Bloom, Shawn Michaels produced the Roxanne and Jade promo. Johnny Moss produced the six-woman tag match. Sometimes I like to read these off on the show because I know that a lot of the Raw and SmackDown ones are pretty standard, and you guys know, but we don't always get a look at the NXT producers. WWE Raw News with them switching to 2 hours. Also, this gives them the ability to do the double tapings that they are doing. People have been asking, will Raw talent be on this UK tour? Yes, Gunther is scheduled. Jey Uso is scheduled on the UK tour. I saw some trolls hitting my mentions over, like, indisputable fact. Like, they are doing double tapings, and it is because of the UK tour. I don't know why it is they don't do UK Raws anymore. I wish they would. I think they should. I don't know if they want to make it seem like a hotter ticket whenever they go there for PLEs, but wish they would do that. But yeah, I was told they felt like there will be some growing pains with WWE Raw at 2 hours, although they're used to doing that because of SmackDown. But they do have a number of double tapings planned. There was some frustration internally with the booking of the women's match and the perceived lack of direction for the talent involved. So hopefully that gets rectified. Okay, so I want to address a conflicting report regarding AJ Styles. AJ Styles returned with, you know, his contract winding down on the October 4th episode of SmackDown, and he worked his match and was taken out via injury, and we had reported the next day we had heard initially that he was fine. Other outlets were reporting, oh, they hear it's serious and all these details. Here's what I can say. He is at least telling people that it's real. And I want to say this with all due respect to him from a physical standpoint, as a performer, as a human, as a man, and to be sensitive to that, I'll report that he is telling people that it's real. But from a viewer standpoint, there's an awful lot that doesn't pass the smell test there. They just happened to end that match when the segment was scheduled to end. They had LA Knight there and ready to interrupt after the match. Segment ended right on time. They kept the camera on AJ Styles, which they do not usually do when somebody's hurt. Not only did they keep the camera on him, they took him with the camera and followed him to Gorilla. Then later on, during a live show, they worked in a trainer's room segment. Okay. It is not easy to make time on a live show like that. Then, beyond all that, they filmed him walking out on crutches and aired it on SmackDown Lowdown. And then after that, Jackie Redman, bless her, she's wonderful. Since when does she tweet out very specific injury news about WWE stuff? Then you got AJ out there quote tweeting it like, everything happens for a reason. There's just a lot that doesn't pass a smell test. If it comes out and he is actually injured and this isn't a part of an elaborate storyline, yeah, I'll be happy to admit that. I mean, this isn't me reporting, hey, this guy is or isn't hurt. I'm just saying that from a visual standpoint and a viewer standpoint, there's an awful lot that I look at here and I go, huh. Well, okay, it seems an awful lot like they're trying to make it spontaneous, but there are still some things they had to do. Good news out of MLW for that company. Tommy Exo has re-signed with the company on a multi-year deal. This is something that they wanted to get done. She had a number of months left on her deal, but both sides of that wanted to get ahead of it and make sure that she was signed and with the company. They have been building the division around her and Jenai Kai. One of the reasons that I'm told that Delmi wanted to come to MLW and then wanted to stay with MLW on two straight contracts was even though she came in with Ashley Vox as a member of the C-Stars, when Ashley took time off, they were still happy to invest in her as a singles performer and give her those opportunities. And that is something that she did not take for granted. She is expected to continue indie work. Ashley Vox is back in doing that as well. But yeah, Delmi Exo has re-signed. We spoke with Delmi on In the Weeds this past Wednesday, so make sure you guys go check that one out as well. Some other details before we get into the Q&A portion. Tony Khan had been working like diligently to make sure that his shows went off without a hitch. They faced a lot of issues due to the hurricanes. And man, I just got to say, the stuff that I've heard that Tony Khan has supplied, that Dax and Cash and Adam Copeland have been doing and the fundraising they've been doing is incredible. Hope that all of you that are out there and were affected by the hurricanes are safe and doing okay and that your loved ones are safe as well. But caused a lot of changes. There was a change atop of the merch charts for Bad Blood. Cody Rhodes didn't top the merch chart. And it's so weird because when he does top them, and I report it, you'll have some weirdos online being like, oh, Cody fed him the news. Then I get these reports from the same source, and it was revealed that actually WWE's generic merchandise, meaning title belts, logo, Bad Blood related stuff, especially the Bad Blood related stuff, actually topped it. People are like, oh, he's not even the top merch seller anymore. And I'm like, what? It's very exhausting to sort of witness that. And I mean, we ran those stories with Roman Reigns as a top merch seller for years, with Becky as a top merch seller, with Cena as a top merch seller when we got that information. Please be less weird about this, friends. Please. Motor City Machine Guns. We had reported on Fightful Select. Their travel was set by for the October 25th SmackDown. They'll be coming in earlier than that. WWE did confirm that they are headed to SmackDown next week. I had some people that were also like, oh, I thought you said October 25th. I said their travel was set for that and they could arrive before. Enough of that stuff. Let's get to the Q&A. My God, lots of questions today. Lots of stuff going on. I mean, we're past the TV deal era. Oh, I'm so excited. I can't wait until ratings viewership isn't a thing. Made the mistake of even tweeting that instead of just tweeting the article last week. And I want to say, like, no matter the weirdos that I got on the Motor City Machine Guns or the merch story, that's when the real weirdos come out, is TV viewership talk. If it wasn't the job, I wouldn't do it. But man, I am excited with Raw going to Netflix, AEW doing the simulcasting. As things stand, what we'll be seeing is really good NXT numbers. That makes me happy because we can talk about how great those numbers are and worry less about the weird people that are going to point out, oh, Raw used to be this. AEW used to be this. Well, guess what? They got a bunch of money, so they're all going to be all right. Let's get to the Q&A. With Lance Archer being put in the Callis family, is there any word on bigger plans for him moving forward? I didn't hear of any specific plans for LFI or Archer. That doesn't mean there aren't any. It's just I know that this was done to freshen up the direction of all involved. T-Mar says, when will Ricky Starks appear in WWE after his recent comments? No time soon. Which company is more likely to do a show in Japan in the next 5 years, AEW or WWE? Well, it depends on what you mean. WWE already does shows there. They just don't do TV or pay-per-views there. AEW is doing a show in Japan. They are teaming up with New Japan to do Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. So, yeah, that'll be there. It'll be AEW, CMLL, ROH, Stardom, and New Japan. What are the plans for Athena? I would imagine and hope that if ROH does not land a TV deal imminently or within the next few months, that they would say, okay, it's time to have her do something else or feature her on Dynamite more. When she shows up on Dynamite, she needs to be treated like a massive deal immediately. But as of now, her plans are to remain on ROH. Johnny DeWitt says Ricky Stark says he wants to wrestle, but it's not up to him. Does that mean he can't head to the Indies while he's under contract? I mean, I'm sure he could. It's just a matter of getting them approved. You have to get approval for those dates by AEW. I don't know that he's thrown any their way, though. With every championship in AEW now being held by a heel, who's your face pick to win the next championship? I think Daniel Garcia wins the TNT title from Jack Perry. I think that one makes an awful lot of sense and is the right move to sort of launch Daniel Garcia in that direction. I think he is a guy that you need to invest television time into right now. He's one of the next ups, and it's time for him to no longer be next up and just be up. Mike Owens says, other than choosing Mox to be the guy to beat him, did Danielson have any say in the angle? Whole thing seemed like something he'd want to do. It very much seemed like something he would want to do. The long-running joke was it was tough to get him to do an angle in which featured him retiring upon losing because the guy wanted to lose like all the time. It was so funny because when he came into AEW, he's like, oh, I don't want to help people. I want to beat everybody. And it was the exact opposite. He wanted to put everybody over. In fact, I had heard of situations where he had beaten people and then came immediately to the back and said, I probably should have lost that match. With the Fox Sports Mexico deal, what do you think the chances are of AEW running a pay-per-view in Mexico in 2025? If I were AEW, I would be trying to beat WWE to the punch there. You've got the connections to CMLL. I would be trying my best to lean into that and beat WWE to the punch. Because next year, if WWE gets Phoenix and Penta, and then they got Rey Mysterio, and they got Santos Escobar, and they got Andrade, they're going to have and Stephanie Vacker, so like they're going to have a really, really good hold on things there. At least from they can go there every so often, put on a major show, and draw perspective. But if I'm AEW, I lean into that talent that I have there, and I hit up CMLL, and I say, let's do something special. Any news on Freddie Prinze's promotion or wrestling efforts? He had been had talks with some places as of this summer, but I haven't heard of anything since then. Any idea what the plans are for a Fight Forever sequel? I haven't heard of a Fight Forever sequel, much less that there will be plans for them. But AEW, they retain the rights to the engine. That's something we had reported last year, actually. And I think that what they'll do is they'll kind of hold on to that and wait until it makes sense for them and maybe find a situation in which producing a new game would work. Do you think we'll see an AEW title match at Wrestle Kingdom between two AEW wrestlers? I think there's a chance that you could see that at some point and then the title gets switched back at Wrestle Dynasty. I think there is a chance, but I think the Wrestle Dynasty is the more likely situation. Also, if I were AEW, I would can the Dynasty show. Since there's a Wrestle Dynasty happening in January, I would nix doing a show called Dynasty a few months later. Best $5 in the business, says Macho Elbow 78. Thank you so much. Says, just received an email survey from AEW about my experience at a recent live event. All Out. How serious are companies when it comes to fan input on surveys? They're very serious, usually, or else they would not bother sending them out or using the resources necessary. I can tell you guys, whenever I am out there saying, what do you guys want me to find out about? what do you want to make this experience better? What kind of shows? I can tell you from a person who runs a business, that's important to me, because not only do I want to serve you guys, whatever you guys like, I'm pretty sure that potential customers would like as well. And I know that AEW does follow up. Look, we had Samantha, as I say this, I read Samantha's follow-up comment and says, seems like AEW listens. About a year ago on surveys, wrote them running out of their special needs bags, and they contacted me with further info. This year's show, they had more than enough. That's pretty cool. I love that. Eli Bennett said, I've heard on podcasts that AEW spends about $100 million on talent cost. Was wondering if that was in the ballpark of what you've heard they spend on talent. No, I have heard nowhere resembling that amount. In fact, as it relates to the Kevin Kelly lawsuit with AEW, it was indicated by Chris Harrington, who is an SVP for AEW, they had spent $60 million across 2 years. So it looks like the $30 to $35 million range is a lot more accurate there, because AEW, I mean, they could lie, but it would not be smart to go and lie in a situation like that. Is Dr. Chris Amon with WWE still? How's he dealing with Punk, given he heads up their medical team? Apologies if this has been covered previously. Well, funny enough, the situation that I spoke about earlier with AJ Styles gave you a pretty good indication that he was, because he was in that segment. So it had been reported about 2 years ago that he had left WWE. And then I think I did a Q&A like a year ago, and I was like, no, he's still there. And it was so funny because somebody, like I think it was Melissa, sent me the Reddit thread. And it was, that was around the time where I just completely got off of Reddit, because there were a bunch of people that were like, well, yeah, it's on the website. Now I'm a wrestling journalist. I'm like, well, yeah, obviously. But I mean, I can't just ignore a question that multiple people are asking here. Chris Amon is still featured on their website. He is still at these shows. He is still a part of WWE. I've heard nothing about how they navigate that with CM Punk, though. I will dig into that, though. Any idea on a Bobby Lashley debut date in AEW? I'd say before Full Gear. Before Full Gear. Between the Hurricane comments and some other talent comments in the past, is NXT looking to improve CTE screening? I do not know what it is about when people go to Orlando and they just start saying wild shit, man. They just start saying wild shit. And I'm not talking like, oh, I like this political candidate. I'm talking like they control the weather type of thing. I'm asked for a Shotzi update. A nice rule of thumb to go by with injuries like that, although the Cora Jade injury doesn't exactly make this a definite, but usually you're looking at 11 to 13 months at least if somebody tears their ACL, and Shotzi tore her ACL 8 months ago. So she's probably going to have a little bit more time out. Hopefully we see her soon. Is Baron Corbin hurt, or is there another reason he's been MIA? He's fine. He's around. Sometimes they have him work dark matches. He had been teaming with Apollo Crews. I really wish that they would utilize that tag team a little bit more. When Baron Corbin came back to SmackDown, I was like, man, I'm really liking the in-ring work that we're seeing here. Like, especially he had a match with Carmelo that was good. But he was at, I think, I want to say the Nashville show, and he and Crews beat Los Garza. He did a couple dark matches before that. They're winning their dark matches. Like, I think on the dark match, quote unquote, circuit, so to speak, they're winning very regularly, but it's usually them facing Angel Umberto or just Carl Anderson. Aaron says, how are you today? I'm doing pretty good. As I film this, I am awaiting a Cincinnati Bengals game, and I felt that it would be better served for my audience to record this show before the Bengals game instead of after the Bengals game, considering the trajectory of that season. Q Kieran says, now that Thunder Rosa has been cleared, have you heard if there's any creative plans for her? I think they were waiting until she got cleared before they were solidifying that. With Jimmy Jacobs' departure from AEW, you said AEW is looking to freshen up their creative. Do you have any idea on anything specific they might be looking to change? From what I understood, there were times recently when Tony Khan felt like AEW maybe did get away from the spirit of what AEW was, especially as it pertained to title contention, which makes me happy. It's something I bitched about regularly on the show. I think that rich and different stories than what you will see on WWE is something they need to lean into, and simplifying things. This is not rocket science. Entertaining wrestlers, entertaining matches, entertaining stories, wins and losses mattering. I will say this, nothing makes wins and losses matter more than when you lose, you might get attempted murdered. So there's that at least. Bit random, what's the status with Tegan Nox? I feel at least she could have a role in NXT if they aren't using her on the main roster. As best I know, she's healthy, but I have not heard anything about her in quite some time. I think she was at maybe a show in New York recently, but she has not worked a dark match. She has not worked speed tournaments, house shows, anything in over 3 months, unfortunately. We have a question about it being reported a couple years ago that Nashville was being considered for WrestleMania. So I'll give you guys a little inside baseball on how this works a lot of times. And it's something that you kind of got to decipher on your own as a person who covers things. But we've seen this with Minneapolis like twice. Like, they cost themselves WrestleMania once, and then they got ahead of themselves for a second one. So what'll happen is a lot of times, like, cities like this will want that, or there will be somebody in a position of power that wants a major event like this because, one, they think it'll generate income, they think it'll generate prestige in their city, they think that any number of things will occur in order to help their agenda or help things for them. And sometimes they'll leak it, and a lot of times it happens to local outlets. Like, I don't want to name a specific outlet here, but you see the call letters like WKRC, WLEX, WKYT, all that stuff here locally. And you'll see like, oh, is the front runner for WrestleMania or something like that. And it's something that they've fed to a local writer trying to push their agenda. I'm not saying it's happened all the time or in this case, but that happens a lot with big wrestling shows. And it specifically happens with WrestleMania a lot. Now, when you're trying to get a new stadium like Nashville was trying to get, or, you know, Cincinnati, Hamilton County, stuff like that, trying to push, you know, major events to come to the area, sometimes what you'll do is you'll give tax breaks, or you will incentivize WWE or other companies by paying them in order to come there. And what that will do is make it more enticing for your city or ownership or whatever to help build a new stadium. If they can, they know that the city can chip away a little bit at that economic impact and have something besides the Tennessee Titan games that you know are already going to be there, that's something that they'll do. But just like the politics that are going on within that room, a lot of times there's politics with the reveals and announcements. Just look at that WrestleMania situation, man. That was a wild one. And how Minneapolis thought they were getting it and ended up going to Vegas. A lot of people were pushing for Vegas. I saw a situation a couple years ago. It was when, I feel like it was the same week of the Pacquiao fight. Money in the Bank was there, and they did a thing where they switched the venues and all that. And there were people in WWE pushing to switch that entire city. And they ended up being all right, but like there were some late pushes there too. I'm asked what my favorite stipulation is for a wrestling match and least favorite. I do not like the original Texas Death Match where you get pinned, then there's a 10 count. I think that is supremely anticlimactic. I just can't stand those. I am a big fan of Royal Rumble matches, honestly. Like, I'll tell you this, man. If you are an indie promotion and for some reason you want to book me pitch a Royal Rumble match, and there's a significant chance that I'll just do it because I love them. I love working them. I love watching them. Even if they're not great matches or anything like that, I am a geek for Royal Rumble matches. I love those things, man. Also, I'm a big Elimination Chamber guy. In fact, I mean, I love War Games. War Games is fun. I think that WWE should have altered the Elimination Chamber structure and done a War Games of their own. I think that the cell in which they had there could have been constructed even a little bit differently to where they could have had War Games in their own structure and been able to do more creative stuff in Elimination Chamber. On the old 2K games, I loved when you could do tag team Elimination Chamber stuff and do teams of three against teams of three. It was a lot of fun. Well, Danhausen never returned to AEW TV. I wouldn't expect it now, but here's how I feel. If it's going to happen, it would happen in the next few weeks because of Halloween season. But I don't think he's been asked to do it. That's what I don't think. Challenge Mania says, why no Christmas MSG show on the calendar this year? Any idea? I have not been given a confirmation that it for sure isn't happening. I had asked earlier this year and been told, yeah, it was. I mean, that's part of the reason I planned a Christmas trip to New York City. I was finally going to get to go to a December 26th house show. And then when I asked recently, I just heard no updates on that, and hopefully it gets added. When Johnny Gargano re-signed with WWE a couple years ago, do you know if he signed a 3 or 5 year contract? Would love to see him in AEW, that Bryan Danielson underdog role at some point. I had never heard of any serious conversations between AEW and Johnny. I know that WWE made it abundantly clear that they wanted him back there. Even Vince back then, contrary to what you would believe, like a lot of people made it abundantly clear to Johnny Gargano and Candace that they wanted them back. Are you watching Heels on Netflix? The show is excellent, deserves a third season. I'm not watching it on Netflix because I already watched it on Stars. I hope they get that third season, though. I am a Mike O'Malley guy, and I really enjoyed that show. Are all the WWE Legends contracts exclusives? Can they still work elsewhere? They can take indies and stuff. They have to get some approvals in many cases. Do you think Ricky Starks wrestles his next match in AEW or elsewhere? I think AEW. What are the chances Tessa gets a contract in the future in the U.S.? Would love to see her and Charlotte, among others. I think the possibility of her working in TNA isn't that far-fetched. I wouldn't say it's imminent or anything like that, but there were some people in AEW way back in the day. I mean, early days that were like, what about Tessa? And it got overruled pretty quickly. But I think if Tessa apologized to each of the people that she wronged, or at least that claim that she wronged them, I think she would eventually get a shot somewhere. But that just hasn't happened. I mean, she is super talented, man. Like, an unreal performer in the ring. Like, really, really good. But they don't want to run that risk of bringing somebody into the locker room that would cause frustration. I mean, there are far too many top talent in AEW that had issues with her, but I have heard situations where numerous people within WWE, when they come into the company or they come back, they will go straight to a person they had issues with and apologize. Like the MVP Chris Jericho thing. I've heard of numerous women that have went to each other and hashed shit out like that as well in WWE. SRS, who do you think the evil mastermind is behind the BCC? I wanted to answer this because I don't know. I don't have an answer. It should not be Shane McMahon. If it's Shane McMahon, it will get collective groans. Just not good. So stay away from that one at the very least. Do you think The Rock ever works a Saudi Arabia show? I mean, if Saudi Arabia directly gave him like millions and millions and millions of dollars, perhaps. What are the talent's views of Bruce Pritchard? I don't hear him discussed much. I mean, people definitely tie him an awful lot to Vince from a creative standpoint. I want to make that very clear. From a creative standpoint, not from a personal or scandal standpoint or anything like that. But The long and short of what I've heard is basically he's there and he does whatever his job is supposed to be. Whatever point he's supposed to get across, he does. Christian says, I feel like the wording of Danielson's retirement changed from retiring full time to retiring the last few weeks. Are those in AEW management less confident that they were of him returning? Now, no, they indicated numerous times full time on the AEW pay-per-view, numerous times. However, there is no guarantee that he is going to wrestle again. There isn't, just to be clear. Sean, I've enjoyed hearing you talk about your ECW fandom back in the day. Curious about your thoughts on Just Incredible in general and why he didn't work out on the WWE run he had around 2001 or so. Well, he didn't work out then because he was ECW made, and I liked him an awful lot back then. Like, in ECW, there were people that I could relate to. Listen, he wore jorts, I wore jorts. He wore a t-shirt, I wore a t-shirt. I could relate to him a little bit. He had that association with the Click. He did a cool little move, the tombstone that spun. That was very, very cool to be able to do. I liked what he did. I really liked the Impact Players as a tag team as well. Now looking back, like, there weren't incredible matches that I saw him in. The Shane Douglas match was very good. But I felt like the team that they put him in with X-Pac and Albert was probably the best fit for him. And, yeah, I mean, I think he was completely serviceable, and he got over to the point to where he probably should have been champion when he was. And I liked it. Do you expect Tony Storm to appear as an AEW TV character before the lead-up to Grand Slam Australia? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. How do people backstage feel about the Jericho Vortex effect? There are definitely people that are aware of it, for sure. When Jericho brought up the Jericho Vortex, the big question backstage among a lot of people was, who smartened Jericho up to the Jericho Vortex thing? So, like, it's a known about thing. Any word on Michael Oku and AEW? They maintain a good relationship. They seem to like him. There were discussions for him to do a little bit of stuff, but he is not signed. Any updates on plans for Scorpio Sky? Nope. They had planned for him to do something with Private Party, and then it got dropped again. Again. This happens way too much with AEW. They got to stop dropping things as much as they have been. Do you think Stephanie Vaquer's signing with WWE would be a catalyst for more women in Mexico to make the jump? Feels like the number of talented women south of the border gets bigger and bigger every year. Yeah, I do. I hope so as well. So if she makes a great impression and really does well, I think that will open up the floodgates, and you're going to see a whole lot more, because that is just an area ripe with talent that they can, especially if they can come over and, you know, learn to cut promos or work in a tag team, since they have a tag team division, there's going to be an awful lot of beneficial talent there. This might be silly, but I'm curious, how is Gorilla made for week to week? Do they build it from scratch every time they set up the stage, or is it something that's able to be transported? WWE has like a Gorilla room that they have that travels. AEW basically curtains off an area, and it's there usually on a flat surface, I believe. Do you feel Private Party get another title shot, maybe even as soon as Full Gear? I think that they will use this as a way of them adding some more elements to their character. I could see the Young Bucks actually losing the title and this feud continuing without the titles. Waffle Rain says, when does John Moxley's contract expire? Could you see him joining WWE? A Shield reunion would be great. He is signed through 2027. So he has at least 3+ years left on his contract. He had worked without a contract for a while in AEW before he re-signed. So I believe it's either fall or the end of 2027. So he's going to be there for quite some time. Could I see him returning to WWE and doing a Shield reunion? At that point, I would imagine that those fellas would be near the twilight of their careers. Moxley could also, let's be real, Moxley at 41, 40, probably not the twilight of his career, but definitely on one of those those runs where, you know, you get into your 40s, all three of those guys are probably working shorter schedules. They are both, or all three of them are in their big contracts right now. So I could see it eventually. I don't think anybody should go and aggregate it or anything and say, oh, Sean says he's this is going to happen. No, I could definitely see it happen because of the love they have for one another. Do you know if there have been pitches for Liv Raquel versus Bianca Jade? Well, the Liv Raquel thing is just getting kicked off. Right now, Liv is in the world title scene, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them move on to that one eventually. Why doesn't AEW use video boards around the ring anymore? I believe it's a safety thing. I'll get that shored up, but there were a lot of people getting injured there. Hey, Sean, do you personally listen to any other pro wrestling podcasts despite this being your life? If so, which ones? I do not listen to a lot of wrestling podcasts these days. I'll say this. If I didn't cover it for a living, I would. Like, I really love the early days of the Bruce Pritchard podcast, the Eric Bischoff podcast. I love to learn about things I didn't know about wrestling, like specific moments, how things work, why they operate, stuff like that. Jeff says, do you feel AEW has to try to justify the pay-per-view price versus having a model like WWE Peacock to overload the card and overdo it for fans to get their money's worth? Listen, if they feel like they do, it's ridiculous because we do not need 14 matches. We don't need 14 matches. 8 and a pre-show match is fine. It is fine. We do not need 14 of them. And anybody saying, well, I make sure I get my money's worth. Listen, we don't need 4 or 5 zero-hour matches. We don't need it. WWE runs 5 on a show because they can. Because they can. And wisely, because they are getting paid a lot of money for TV and they want to give some premium matches to that as well. I think what WWE is doing is very smart. Now, I would have it up to 6. I think 6 is a good, nice number. 7 is one that, you know, would look like, okay, well, not the standard 8 that a lot of people looked at, but, you know, sometimes 8 would be a lot. I think 5 or 6 is a good sweet spot. For AEW, I think 8 would be that sweet spot. With Penta having 1 month left on his deal, do you think he waits for his brother or does he join alone? I think he'll probably head on to WWE. That's just a hunch, though. It's not a report. Are the higher-ups in WWE happy with Cody's drawing capabilities of champion? Yes, they're incredibly happy. He is moving merch to an extreme degree. Are you excited for the new Reds manager? Terry Francona is a baseball legend. Seeing what he could do with Cruz will be exciting to see. Yes, I'm very excited, and I'm shocked, honestly. Like, so I grew up in the 1990s when the Reds had Lou Piniella and Davey Johnson, and then they went out and got King Griffey Jr. They would bring in guys like Kevin Mitchell and Eric Davis back to the team. They would go and swing trades or sign Greg Vaughn or Dante Bichette or Denny Nagel, like people like that, and trade for Bip Roberts, like people that were all-star caliber players. And that is not the Reds anymore. And the Reds suck, man. The Reds management sucks. I was not expecting them to fire David Bell and then get Terry Francona. And I know a lot of people said, why the hell did they fire David Bell towards the end of the season? And I was like, there's got to be something more to this. There's got to be something more. Why would they do that? Well, the reason is they knew that a lot of teams would be after Terry Francona, especially at the end of the season when it is standard for managers to get fired or right after early playoff exits. So they got ahead of it and put themselves in a position where they were able to talk to Terry Francona for the job and got him. And what I like about Terry Francona is he does not accept mediocrity. He is a proven winner, and he's a proven winner with both big and small market teams. Excited about that. Hi, Sean. Is there any truth to the rumors Mox threatened to quit earlier this year and in turn messed up the plans for Swerve and Danielson, or is it baseless Twitter gossip? I have never heard anything like that. I had been told that since like March or April, they knew that Danielson was going to beat Swerve Strickland at All In for the world title. I have not heard that one bit. And when Moxley took his time off, they knew when he'd be back. I have never heard anything even resembling that. I think I saw like a tweet about that, and I was like, what on earth? What's the coolest name in your contacts list? That is a very like slick way of trying to ask me who my sources are. Here's what I'll do. I will scroll down to a certain page on my contacts list and tell you an interesting name that's on there, or maybe not interesting. There you go. Tanner Saraceno. Anybody remember him? He was on Tough Enough one year. Still have his number in my phone. Do you have an update about Killswitch? I wished him well last weekend and heard back from him. He is on oxygen. He is nowhere near an in-ring return. He is not back in the gym. Can you say what led to Lucha Brothers wanting to leave AEW? Can't imagine Tony wouldn't make them a great offer. I had heard that maybe an intermediary that was supposed to relay AEW's desire in which to keep them maybe didn't relay that desire and in the manner in which AEW would have preferred. Jason says, prior to the last hour, was Lio Rush under contract or was it legit just signed? I don't know. I mean, I had been told since June that AEW had brought him on and he was a regular. So I don't know if like the physical contract was signed or anything like that, but I know that that was something that AEW was very, Tony especially, wanted to bring Lio Rush back in. Any idea where Speedball ends up? I think that he will get an offer to retain or to remain with TNA at the very least. But if I were AEW, WWE, I'd probably be trying to make that offer too. I think he'd be a great fit on ROH as well. Guys, I want to say thank you all so much for joining me. Again, check out our select answers, and I'm still digging stuff up, still trying to find out things for you guys. Please spread the word about FightfulSelect.com. Just tell people you like it. Can't tell you how important that is for us and what we do. But if you want to keep asking questions, head over to Discord in the Ask SRS section. Till next time, guys, we are out.